A new legislative session begins in Bismarck. New Governor Kelly Armstrong gets right to work on property taxes. The Cass County Jail finds some room for inmates from the neighbors next door. One of the big October wildfires in western North Dakota was just one big accident. And Donald Trump has another big businessman ready to invest in the U.S., while saying there will be hell to pay if Hamas doesn't release hostages. Yes, friends, it has been a busy day here, and glad to bring it all to you on the Steve Hallstrom Show. My name is Steve. I am the host of the show, Addison Loger, my producer, my co-pilot, my good buddy, and the guy who makes it all happen behind the glasses here with me as well today, and always thankful for his help juggling all the balls behind the scenes so that we can have a lot of fun for 2 hours. My goal during this program is to help you do what I've been doing the last hour or so, and that is catching up on what's going on in the busy world. I kind of do my day job here at the station until about 3 o'clock, then buzz into the studio and say, what in the world happened while I was in the bunker today? I dig it all up and prepare it for you from 4 to 6. We have some guests. We have some features. We have some news. We talk a little sports and weather as well. We have a darn good time. I'm glad that you're here with me. If you want to give a call today, you sure can, 701-271-1100. And that is the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. They've recently expanded and can get you in fast. They now offer counseling, occupational therapy, physical therapy, and a nurse practitioner. Make an appointment. Get in this week at valleychristian.co. The Steve Hallstrom Studios, built on a solid foundation thanks to our sponsor, Precision Concrete Cutters and Ramjack North. Your home is your greatest asset. Protect it. Go to PCCND.com to find out more. On the program today, going to visit with Mark Spurl, old friend of mine. Mark, former NDSU quarterback, now in the Bison Hall of Fame. And he's got a big smile on his face today. We're going to talk a little bit about last night's game, get his thoughts on Cam Miller and how he will be or should be remembered by Bison fans when you think about some of the great quarterbacks in NDSU history. So we'll do that today with Mark. Back when I was doing my TV days, he was my my color guy when I was doing play-by-play for NDSU football. We did a bunch of games together, and it's always good to catch up with him every once in a while and get his thoughts on Bison football, especially on a day like today. Did you watch the game last night? That was as fun as I've had watching a football game. I felt like NDSU was in pretty good shape, especially in the first half when they built a 21-3 lead. NDSU was an underdog going into that game. But the Bison came out and were absolutely dominant in the first half. Montana State rallied like we knew they would. They have one of the best players in the country, maybe the best player in the country at quarterback, and he put up some points in the second half, no doubt about that. But the Bison were equal to the task, and they ended up winning it 35-32. That NDSU football team is amazing. The numbers behind that team and what they have done are just ridiculous when you really look at what they have done. And it's one thing to have a good season, maybe a couple of them, but my goodness, what they have done time after time after time. 10 national championships, that's just the FCS championship. No other school has got more than 6. 100, listen to this now, over the last 13 years, they have a record of 186 wins, 21 losses. 10 of the last 14 national championships and 5 of the last 8 go to NDSU. The coaches change, the players change, the fans sometimes change, but the fans are always there for them. But talk about dynasty. I don't even know if that begins to explain what NDSU has done in football. It's amazing. Every coach they bring in there finds a way to lead his team to Frisco, and they win it. Every quarterback plays for NDSU and gets a national championship or two before they leave. It's crazy. I grew up a Minnesota Gopher football fan and become a Bison fan since being in North Dakota, and I just have to tell you, if you have been a Bison fan since you were a youngin, and you don't really know what it's like to be a fan of any other team, just know that you have had it better than any other football fan has ever had it in the history of football fandom. That's how good it has been. You do not know how lucky you are. What NDSU has done just doesn't happen, ever. But it has in Fargo. And I don't know. People ask, how have they done it? And we all shake our head and we shrug our shoulders and say, well, they've got resources, they got great fans, they have a tradition, but traditionally goes so far. I don't know. I don't know how they've done it, but they're fantastic. And it was really fun to watch that game last night. They showed up and they just got the job done. If you have a theory, like what's the thing that you think makes NDSU football so special? Why, if you had to point to one thing about why NDSU's had the success, what would you say? I'm not sure that I can tell you one thing. There's a lot of different factors, but the one thing, I don't know. Maybe you've got a theory. Would love to hear from you about that today. But, man, what a fun game that was to watch. I needed that after the Vikings game on Sunday night, that's for sure. All right, let's get to it here. The 4 o'clock wrap, semi-automatic storylines going rapid fire to catch you up on what's been a very busy and eventful day. We start with the almanac for today, January 7th, 2025. Average high for this day is 18, average low is 1. Record high 44 back in 1963. Record low minus 39 back in 1887. I told you yesterday we would have a few of these in a row back in 1887. There was one week when I don't know what happened, but it got cold. Really, really cold. Sunrise this morning was at 8:11. Sunset will be at 4:56. Yes, friends, we're getting close to the time when the sun doesn't set until after 5. That just makes it feel like winter will someday come to an end. We'll need about another 4 or 5 days to get there, but we're going to gain a minute 24 seconds of daylight today. In the markets today, it was a tough day. There was a big sell-off on Wall Street in the tech sector. Don't know if it's profit-taking, don't know if there were things that were said by some of the CEOs, not sure, but traders decided to sell a little bit today. The Dow was down 178 points, S&P 500 down 66, and the NASDAQ was off 375. WTI crude oil today, up about 80 cents at 74.42. There are concerns about some supply disruptions overseas. If we do things right here, we won't have to worry about that as much because we can take care of it on our own, but we need a new president to get in there and start making things happen. Gold today up $15.70 an ounce at $2,663. Silver up $30.66. No, excuse me. That's the price at $30.66. It was up 8 cents today. Sorry about that. Bitcoin today down $5,000 or about 5.2% at $96,859. AAA says the average price of a gallon of regular unleaded gas nationwide is $3.06. North Dakota's 280, Minnesota 293, South Dakota 281. Diesel today up a penny at $3.53 a gallon. In the news today, the North Dakota biennial legislative session began today in Bismarck. Every 2 years, the citizen legislature descends upon Bismarck to start their work. There were sessions held today of the House and Senate to hear messages from a variety of groups and speakers to get things kicked off. But the highlight of the day was Kelly Armstrong, the new governor, giving his State of the State address. That was the big thing today. And he did not waste any time, as he promised, talking about property taxes. The big story coming from the legislature today, Kelly Armstrong outlined a property tax relief and reform plan that he says will put the majority of primary residences on a path to zero property taxes within the next decade. Now, I sorted through this whole thing. There's a lot to it, but I'm going to try to boil it down for you into about 30 seconds. That, you know, that primary residence credit that a lot of us got, you just had to sign up if you own primary residence here and you got the $500. Well, they're going to expand that. They're going to go from $500 to $1,000 there, and then they're going to give you another $550 by tapping into legacy fund money. So altogether, what you're getting there is you're going from $500 basically right away to $1,550. By the year 2037, Armstrong says the plan can be expanded so that homeowners would get a tax credit of up to $4,240. Now, by 2037, that's a little ways off, but you get the point there. He also proposed reform by capping annual local property tax increases at 3%. So this is Bismarck telling Fargo that you have to spend no more than 3% with your annual property tax increases. If the full 3% isn't used, whatever percentage is left over could be banked for future years. Armstrong says we should absolutely be able to tell Fargo what to do because when this whole thing gets done, we'll be paying more than 50% of everybody's property taxes. So we should have an opportunity to say something with that much skin in the game. He also revealed a new cabinet position today, the Commissioner of Recovery and Reentry. This is basically merging the jail system with rehab. So that was the big deal from Kelly Armstrong today. You're going to hear a lot of stories in the news about lawmakers are going to take up this bill and that bill. I'm not going to do that here on this program because I could do nothing else all day because every lawmaker is going to come in with some bills they want to get done. And I don't know how to separate them out as far as this one should get some time of day. This one shouldn't. If I see something that sounds really unusual or notable, I'll tell you. But I didn't see any today, so there you go on that. I'm not saying others shouldn't report on them. I'm just saying we could sit here all day and talk about, you know, Steve from Rolla wants this bill to get considered. So I don't know how you say that anyone has more clout than the other. The Clay County Commissioners voted unanimously to approve housing Cass County inmates at the Clay County Jail. It's been approved by North Dakota State Department of Correction and Rehab. And they're going to move about 10 inmates from the Cass County Jail to the Clay County facility over in Moorhead. And that is now something that the it has been approved by Clay County. So Cass County still has to go on that. But they are offering a little bit of space over there because they have it until the new jail gets built here in Fargo. Forum reports today that a Fargo woman's been sentenced to 9 years in jail for injuring three people when she drove her vehicle into a crowd in the parking lot of a Fargo nightclub. Her name is Princess Gwei, G-W-E-H, 25 years of age, pleaded guilty today in Cass County District Court to two counts of aggravated assault and one charge of reckless endangerment for the incident that happened back in February of 2024 at the now-closed Cairo restaurant and bar. Other news today, North Dakota wildlife officials say that the origin of one of those big fires that happened in early October in western North Dakota was a result of a tree that was in a tree line in a roadway with high winds in the area that caused that tree to come in contact with an energized distribution line, a power line, and that caused the dry natural fuels, as you might say, to ignite, and the fire began to spread. It ended up burning more than 30,000 acres. High winds, bent a tree over, caught it on the line, and there you go. Three men have been arrested after an ATM burglary in Arthur, North Dakota. Cass County deputies responded at 2:15 this morning. Sheriff's office say they found the ATM broken into, and they heard from the Trail County Sheriff's Office that a bank had been burglarized and the vehicle associated with it was going back to Cass County. Deputies found the vehicle, tried to stop it. It fled eventually. They did end up tracking down the three gentlemen involved here. One man from Fargo, one from Garrison, North Dakota, and another guy with no permanent address arrested on suspicion of burglary. This is turning into a trend, the ATM thefts. NBC News reports that President-elect Donald Trump is warning all hell will break out in the Middle East. All hell will break out in the Middle East if Hamas does not release the hostages it's holding in Gaza by the time he's inaugurated 2 weeks from yesterday. He said this at a press conference at his Mar-a-Lago club in Palm Beach, Florida today. He has said this earlier, doubling down on it today. NBC also reports that Meta, the Facebook people, have announced they are going to eliminate their third-party fact-checking program and implement a community notes model similar to the one that exists on X, the artist formerly known as Twitter. Mark Zuckerberg said the company is also bringing back political content on its platforms and removing restrictions on subjects like immigration and gender. Zuckerberg announced the changes on Fox News Channel. Sounds to me like they're trying to cozy up to the new president. Tomorrow will be the first day of classes at the new Capstone Classical Academy building in South Fargo. It is a 100,000-square-foot building. And I believe that when we had Paul Fisher in here last week talking about it, it was about a $50 million building, and the land itself was worth a whole bunch, too. So we wish them all the best as they get ready and begin classes there tomorrow. And you are invited, my friend, to the Fargo Park Sports Center's open house, where Phase 2 will be launched. 6 pickleball courts, an indoor playground, 6 party rooms, 2 ice sheets and 4 new basketball courts. It's all happening from 4:30 to 7 a week from Thursday down there, and you can play for free on that night. And the pros at Fargo Moorhead Pickleball will be there to help teach you the game or sharpen your skills. You can skate on the new rinks. Open skate from 4:30 to 5:30 as well. Refreshments, goodies, tired kids all waiting to happen down there a week from Thursday. And those are some of the stories that are making headlines here on this Tuesday afternoon. We call it the 4 o'clock wrap. When we come back on the program, we know what states saw the most people leave in 2024 and what states people were moving to. We'll give you these population trends just in from the United Van Lines, the moving people. That has been making the rounds on the newswire today, and we will tell you where they're going from, where they're going to, coming up next. If you have not heard yet, Kingpins has a newly remodeled elite suite, perfect for a corporate event, team building event, fundraiser, big family get-togethers. The suite includes 6 of your own bowling lanes, your own bar and bartenders, and it holds up to 125 people. 3 projection screens and projectors. Sounds fun for kind of a new twist on an old business meeting. Make a big presentation there. Fun, work, whatever. It's where you want to be. Kingpins is your place for family fun, too. Don't forget about that. The junkyard, bowling, arcade, with over 70 games and escape rooms there. And Barron's Eatery, always serving up a good plate of food. Kingpins, located off I-29 and 52nd, online at kingpins.com. 701-271-1100 is the phone number. And if you want to weigh in, my question to all of you today is this. If you could pinpoint one reason why you think NDSU football has had such a dominant run over the last 15 years, what would you point to? If you come up with any one thing, there's a whole bunch of them. But what do you think is the biggest reason NDSU has been so successful? Got an answer from the text line here. Steve, it's quite simple when it comes to NDSU football. They are playing below their weight class. All other teams that have success at the Division II or FBS level move up. I think they meant to say the FCS level. The Bison refuse to do so and continue to dominate. They are the big boy pushing around smaller kids. It's fun for the players, parents, alumni, etc., but they should move up. I'm not impressed anymore. So there's a lot of truth to that. Here's the thing, though. You can't say the Bison are refusing to move up. They can't, you guys. You can't just decide to join the Big Ten. You have to be invited by a conference. So who's going to invite them? There's only really 4 major conferences anymore. You got the Big 12, the Big Ten, the ACC. There is no Pac-10 anymore, and the Mountain West. Now, Mountain West would be great, but then you're sending your soccer team to Hawaii for regular season conference soccer matches. That's a tough run. You got to raise a lot of money to be able to afford that kind of an athletic program. Football would be fun. Basketball would be great. Football could be competitive in the Mountain West. I don't know about the other sports there, but you need a conference to invite you. And not too long ago, the Mountain West was looking for a school. It looks like they found one, though. It looks like Northern Illinois is going to get that opportunity. And moving up to the MAC or one of those midline conferences, maybe, but that's not much of a jump from where they're at now. And if you say, well, what about starting their own conference? Well, you can't do that. The big schools have all the money from football and men's basketball. Sorry, ladies, it's just the way it is. And they don't want to share that with newcomers. So what are you going to do? Put together a conference and then be a conference that can't play playoffs? That doesn't seem to make any sense at all. So they're kind of stuck until somebody decides to invite them in. And that hasn't happened yet. So you can't say that they refuse to move up. They just don't have any options there. Are they playing above their weight class? Yeah, I mean, there's not that many schools that are competitive. It's going to turn into the Dakotas and Montana Invitational, I think, which we've already seen that, right? 3 of the final 4 teams were, all 4 of them, right? South Dakota State, NDSU, South Dakota, and Montana State. So the final 4, I think, every year is going to be Dakota or Montana schools. All right, I will get to my who's moving where thing in a couple minutes, but I wanted to answer that text message. Austin Erickson is here from the newsroom checking in. He's got an update on the latest headlines that he's been working on in the Flag Family Newsroom. Hello, Austin.
Hi, and a lot of these headlines have to do with North Dakota Governor Kelly Armstrong's State of the State
address. Well, it's the big story today, brother. You won't wear out your welcome here with those stories.
So he outlined plans on property taxes. Armstrong wants the legislature to cap future increases in property tax budgets by 3%. If that isn't used, the remainder can be carried up over for up to 5 years. Armstrong also proposes increasing the existing primary residence property tax credit of $500 to $1,000 per year. The governor also would like to use legacy fund earnings to provide more money to the primary residence credit. The total combined primary residence relief is expected to be $1,550 per year for the next 2 years and at least $2,000 per year for the following 2 years. And of course, this is just a proposal. The legislature would have to enact this plan or could change it any way they see fit.
This is going to be fascinating, Austin, because he's telling the local municipalities you can't increase property taxes by more than 3% going forward. Well, okay, what does that mean then to City of Fargo, City of West Fargo, City of Horace? Because they're going to have to at some point fall in line, or they're going to exceed the cap as the county assesses those taxes. So there's a whole lot of dominoes to fall on this one. This is going to be very interesting.
And another way to look at it, too, is that wages, don't they only go up like 2% a year? So really, it's not like you're making money if you get a 2% raise.
Yeah.
So a 3% raise in property taxes would be a little bit significant, at least.
Well, City of Fargo wants to increase your taxes 10% every year, so that's, we haven't even started to talk about that.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Our audience knows how crabby I am still about that, so
that's another,
I bring it up like three times a show.
Thing to open. Armstrong also announces a new commissioner for recovery and reentry. He will appoint Director of Recovery Reinvented, Jonathan Holth. Holth has openly shared his struggles with alcoholism and says he's been sober for 11 years.
Yeah, we wish him well. Someone who's kind of lived that battle will be sort of leading the charge. Not a bad thing.
And I'm not sure that this would be a thing. Well, it could be, but if Catherine Burgum, former First Lady, didn't have recovery reinvented.
Yes, there you go.
And the Clay County Commission votes unanimously to approve housing Cass County inmates at the Clay County Jail. That move has been approved by the North Dakota Department of Correction and Rehabilitation. Clay County Sheriff Mark Empting says his staff will start with moving 10 inmates over to the Moorhead facility if the Cass County Commission also approves that move. He adds the Clay County Jail has 103 inmates housed there and can hold up to 150 without having to hire additional staff. Cass County Sheriff Jesse Johnner says 15 to 25 inmates weekly are housed at different facilities in North Dakota. That makes it difficult for those who have to be taken to court in Fargo.
Until the new jail is built in April, they'll be struggling for room. Thank you, Austin. Appreciate the good effort. Let's send it over to the Weather Center now. Meteorologist Dean Wysocki's got an update on the weather for us. Well, at halftime, it looked like it was going to be a whooping. And then you thought, can NDSU hold on? Well, they certainly did last night, beating Montana State 35-32. It was the 10th national championship for NDSU since moving to the FCS level. 19 national titles in all now as a program. The numbers are absolutely amazing. And they've been going for a while. NDSU been playing football for more than 100 years and some very good seasons, including back in the early 80s when my next guest led the attack for the NDSU offense. Mark Spurl, NDSU Hall of Fame quarterback, joins me here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. And he joins us on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. Mark, it's been a while, my friend. How you been?
I've been very well, Steve. And yourself?
Doing good. Thanks for spending a few minutes here. For those of you that didn't hear my kind of opening comments, Mark and I called a bunch of games together when I was working for WDAY-TV. And he was the color guy. I was the play-by-play guy. We had a lot of fun. NDSU's first kind of big road game since moving up to FCS. At the time, 1AA out at Montana. We worked that game together and did a few others as well, and so it's great to visit with Mark. He's got such great perspective and understanding of the program, having played there himself. I guess I'll just ask you what your thoughts were watching that game unfold last night.
Well, it was a lot of fun. It was very interesting to see. You could definitely see that the Bison came out with probably something to prove a little bit. You know, it's a different theory or different feeling because they weren't favored in this game. They've been favored pretty much every other time they've been down there. But this time, pretty much all the talk was Tommy Mellott and Montana State. And so I think there were a few of those guys that probably took that a little bit personally.
Sure seemed like it. 21-3 at halftime as NDSU just moved right down the field. A couple of big plays along the way, certainly. They got out to the big lead. Things got interesting in the second half, but tough to spot a team at 21-3 lead, a good team, and then hope to come all the way back. But it sure got interesting there at the end. Mark, I'm curious your thoughts on how NDSU continues to do what it does. I've been asking our audience today, you know, if you could kind of put your finger on one thing, why has NDSU been able to maintain this level of success for so long? I had a text that just came in and it said, Steve, my theory is NDSU's success word is teamwork, teamwork of all players and teamwork by all the coaches too. There's something to that spirit of that team at NDSU, Mark. How do you explain the success that NDSU has had?
Well, that's a good word for it, teamwork, but it's more than just on the football program. It goes throughout the entire school and it goes throughout the entire community. You know, it has to be a concerted effort to get enough support within the community to basically fund the process. You know, you got the Team Makers, now you've got the Gold, Green and Gold Collective, and with that changing of the college football world. But you know, in the program itself, I think it's a lot of continuity. You've got people that have been there a long time. You look at Coach Polisic, and he was here for however many years it was before, and then he left and got more experience, and now he's come back. But he has that base in the program. And it all goes back to the 1960s when Daryl Moser came in, and Danny Israel instilled a lot of hear the sayings, once a bison, always a bison, bison pride. Those are more than just saying. Those are taken to heart by the players, the coaching staff, and everybody around the whole program. So I think that's the primary thing. And it just kind of one thing builds to the next. And it just, you know, you get guys that are anxious to get here and come and play here and be a part of that. And I think that is the biggest part of the whole thing.
Back when you played, Mark, NDSU was a team that was known for they're going to run it right at you, they're going to do it really well, and you better be able to run the ball and stop the run if you're going to beat NDSU. And certainly NDSU still likes to run it a fair amount, but they wouldn't have won that game last night without some good passing. Talk a little bit about how you've seen that offense evolve over the years.
Well, it has completely evolved. You know, back in the late 70s when Jim Wacker showed up, you know, it was the Veer offense, the triple option. You know, if you passed 10, 11 times a game, that was a lot. And there was nothing short. You know, it was all the play action and trying to go deep. Well, you know, that works. You take time off the clock. You grind things out. And, you know, time of possession was a huge deal. It still is. You could see that last night in that first drive that NDSU had. You know, they took 8 minutes, I think it was, off the clock on the first scoring drive. And that shortens the game. It shortens the possessions by the other team, and it helps, you know, your defense when you're on the field as an offense, it helps that team get the rest. But as far as the evolution of the game, it's not just here, it's all over the place. You've got the athletes are better, they're more skilled, they're bigger, they're stronger, they're faster, and that goes through throughout the whole program. Here, you know, the strength and conditioning program is unbelievable. These guys, you know, it's year round. You know, back in my day, it wasn't year round. It was, you know, during the season. You had winter workouts, but it wasn't an expectation or a kind of an expectation, but not a designed program to go through the summer and guys staying around and you know, getting to know each other better, working on the game. You went and did your stuff, you know, you went and played softball, or you went to the lake, or you did whatever you did.
Yeah.
So I think that part has really grown. Offensively, when you've got a guy in Cam Miller who basically completed every 3 out of 4 of his passes this year. And you think about that. So 4 times, he passed the ball 4 times. Somebody catches it 3. And that is unbelievable. A 75% completion rate is virtually unheard of.
Yes.
Back in the day, if you were hitting 50%, you were pretty good. So that whole thing. And of course, the offenses are designed differently. And you've got multiple guys out there in the receiving game and spread out. So it is a complete and total overhaul. The offensive linemen are big. These guys are huge. I think they said last night in the game size of the offensive line averaged about 6'5 and 308, I think, something like that.
Yeah.
It's just that level of athletes has changed. They're not just big. They can move. They're agile. They can, they're not real fast. They're still linemen, but they have that ability and great footwork, and they work on that.
Yeah.
So I think it's just a whole evolution of the entire game of football. It's a completely different game.
You talked about Cam Miller. Last night he went 19 of 22, a couple hundred yards and a couple of touchdowns. I'm trying to think of the 3 incompletions. I know one went through the hands of a running back, probably should have been caught early on, and I think he spiked the ball to kill the clock maybe late first half. So those were 2. And maybe there was one where he misfired, but he was really, really good at the biggest moments. Your big-time players have got to come up big in the big games, and he certainly has done that. How do you think Cam Miller should be remembered when you think about the great quarterbacks NDSU has seen, kind of going back to your era and all the way through to Carson Wentz and Easton Stick and Trey Lance? How does Cam Miller fit into that bunch, do you think?
He fits in right in the middle of all of it, between Carson and Easton and Trey Lance and all of these guys. He is right there. His accuracy is unbelievable. He had a good strong arm, drawing those across the field out patterns, those sorts of things. He was very good with those, but the accuracy was the big thing. He didn't miss very often. The third one that was incomplete last night, Bryce Lance dropped kind of a little inside curl route, and he said he should have probably caught that, but it wasn't a great on target perfect throw by any means, but it was something that I remember a ninth grade football coach always said, if you can get your hands on it, you should be able to catch it.
Yep.
And he had both hands on it. I mean, the D back came up, but. Cam is you think about the number of yards that he threw for, and again, it's a different era, a different style, but he was the calm, collective, calming force every game this year. You didn't see him get flustered. You didn't see him, have an off day. I think he had maybe one off day all year, but you didn't see that. And you had seen that, a couple of years ago, maybe, when he hadn't had as much experience. And as he gained that experience, he gained that confidence, he gained that ability. He just worked on his game.
Yeah. Yeah. It was fun to watch last night for sure. I want to ask you, Mark, the question that a lot of people are asking today, and that is about the future of NDSU's program. There are a lot of fans who love where NDSU is at right now and say, hey, why do we want to go move up that next level and maybe play a bowl game at 10 o'clock on a Wednesday afternoon on Wednesday, December 29th? And then there are other people, I'm one of them, who would love to see NDSU challenge itself at that next level if they could get into, say, the Mountain West Conference or something like that. As someone who has been in this program and is a proud part of it, how do you look at the future for NDSU and maybe what they should try to pursue if the opportunities come their way?
Well, if the opportunity comes their way, I think they're going to have to take advantage of that. You've seen the FCS program and the FCS level kind of, dumbing down is the right word, but you see some of these other schools that have moved to the FBS level, and it's kind of watered down the FCS a little bit. you've got the top tier, you know, South Dakota State, North Dakota State, Montana State, Montana, now University of South Dakota, and maybe a few others in there. But after that, you don't have a high level of very competitive teams all the time. These are programs that have been established and have continued to be productive and to be competitive for a number of years. Some of the other programs you might have, you know, a year or two, and then they kind of drop back again. So I think, and it reminds me of, you know, back when I was, well, after I was done playing, and Division II kind of ended up doing kind of the same thing. There were a lot of the smaller schools who couldn't afford to fund the scholarships that Division II was allotted. And so they started legislating through the NCAA to reduce the number of scholarships so that they could be competitive. And I think that is, you know, similar to what FCS is going through a little bit right now. And it's a dollar and cent issue. And that is as big a part of it as there will ever be, is the money part. And you see through the whole Mountain West talk and thoughts that, you know, NDSU was going to get an input, you know, you saw the big conferences, the Power Four guys saying, no, we don't want to bring any more FCS programs because it thins, you know, thins the pot of money that we get. But I think it's going to have to be a situation that's ideal and right. Obviously, I think they'd probably like to go in all sports, but if there's a football only like the Mountain West would have been, I think that's an opportunity that you really, really have to look at hard.
Yeah.
The other part of it is here in Fargo, North Dakota, it's not the easiest to get here from other parts of the country. There's not a lot of schools real close, but, you know, Mountain West, you've got teams in Hawaii, and now you're going to have one in Illinois. So it's spread out. You look at the Big Ten. You've got USC, UCLA, Oregon, and then you've got Rutgers out on the East Coast. So it's a nationwide thing, but it all comes down to the dollars and cents.
Yeah, always does. Marco, I appreciate the time, my friend. Great catching up with you. Thanks for the perspective. I'll let you get back to either working the nail gun or the shooting range. I'm not sure what you got going on behind you there, but somebody is active getting something done. So.
It's a hockey game. Dave. It's a hockey game. My grandson's JV game, and they just got started. So the doors have been opening and closing. I've been out in the lobby. So that's probably what you've been hearing.
But
it was fun to catch up with you, too. And hopefully we can do it again, maybe sooner. You know, once a year.
We're kind of a once a year thing. You're right. We'll have to do it again a little sooner. Mark, thanks for the time. Enjoy the hockey game. And what's your grandson's name?
Drew Calvis.
Drew. All right. Go, Drew. Go. Yeah. All right. Go get him. All right. Thanks so much, Mark. You take care.
You bet, Steve. Thanks.
Bison Hall of Fame quarterback Mark Spurl joining us here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. One other text has come in on this one. Steve, it comes down to respect for the game and discipline, something most football teams lack. In case in point, the quarterback from Montana State, when he tipped the garbage can over on the NDSU sideline, probably should have been a 15-year yard on sportsmanlike conduct. Yeah, I saw that too. They didn't make a big deal about it on the telecast. I thought that's kind of a cheap move, but kids – spur of the moment, you know, the emotions and the heat of battle. I'm not going to hold it against them too much. All right, 453, Steve Hallstrom Show. What's your theory? Why has NDSU been so good at football for so long? Would love to hear from you on that. Plus, another big investment in the U.S. announced by President Trump today. Who is it and what are they going to do? That's next. All right, where are people moving to and where are they moving from? Well, every year this story comes out where United Van Lines puts out a list of where their moving trucks are going to and from. The top 10 inbound states in 2024, they were moving to Vermont. 75% of the traffic was inbound in Vermont. Idaho, second at 67%. Oregon and South Carolina tied for third at 63%. Arizona, Number five at 61. South Dakota was ninth, by the way, 59% of the traffic moving in. Where were they going out of? Well, you won't be too surprised to see the top couple on the list, New Jersey and New York. 69% of the traffic was outbound in New Jersey. New York, 67. Illinois, 66. Connecticut, 64. Kansas, 61. People moving out of Kansas. That's interesting. Number six, North Dakota. Wait a minute. 57% of the trucks were going outbound. I guess it doesn't. It's not scientific, right? But got a pretty good sense of something going on. I don't know. Maybe there's some big layoffs out in the oil patch. I'm not exactly sure, but I thought that was interesting there. President-elect Trump today announced a $20 billion investment for data centers in the U.S. by a United Arab Emirates company led by billionaire Hassan Sajwani. And he's a friend of the Trump family, said he was inspired by the election, and he's going to put a lot of money into the United States, he says. The Japanese guy, Masayoshi Son, did something similar last month, said he's going to invest $100 billion in the United States. So, of course, the big media here is like, well, they're obviously doing it because they're trying to bribe Trump. So that's always part of all these stories, too. Hour two of the program coming up next. Hour number two of the Steve Holsham Show, coming to you live from the Steve Holsham Studio, built on a solid foundation thanks to our sponsor, Precision Concrete Cutters and Ramjack North. Your home is your greatest asset. Protect it and go to PCCND.com to learn more. Before we get to the top five at five, let's go to the phone lines. Alex has been hanging on for a while. He wants to chime in on the Bison football game last night and that great program there. He joins us on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. Hey, Alex, how are you?
Pretty good, Steve. So first, I just want to start off with just, you know, let me take a moment just to recognize how insane this success has been over the last, you know, 15 years.
No kidding. Yes.
But I think a big part of it is, you know, that first 3 years of the dynasty, you know, it developed a culture that really helped with, you know, recruiting, getting the next group of guys in that were then able to, you know, continue the success. And I think recruiting really helps play a big deal in this. You know, I think we're getting a lot of players that are being overlooked, you know, at the FBS level. And now they, you know, they start looking for somewhere else to play. And, you know, if you're looking around trying to go play somewhere, you're a top tier player. Why wouldn't you want to go play somewhere that's had the insane level of success that we've had? You know, you're going into a program that, you know, instead of winning a national championship as a hope and a dream, it's, you know, it's a high, not really high probability, but it's definitely a strong possibility, you know, and then it just keeps building and building and building. And look at all the facilities that NDSU has compared to other schools. I mean, why would you want to play somewhere else if you're being overlooked at the FBS level or whatever? So I think that plays a lot of part into it.
Yeah, it's fun to win, right? It's fun to win. And tell those players last night that what they did was any less significant than, you know, Alabama winning the big school championship. It wasn't, not to them and to the fans. It's fun. You get to win a national title and have a chance to do that. And I saw a couple of days ago, I talked about it here on the program, there's a defensive back now who's transferring into NDSU through the transfer portal. And he's going to come into Fargo and play football. The transfer portal is sending kids from Texas Tech to NDSU. So I guess we're in that time. And like you said, Alex, hey, if a kid can go play, you know you can get to the NFL from Fargo. A lot of players now have done that. And NDSU starting to win some recruiting battles now, even over Big Ten schools. So, yeah, the difference between the athletes, you know, if you take a look at Ohio State versus NDSU, all the guys are going to look a little different. But for most of the FBS level, the kids aren't all that much bigger, all that faster than the NDSU kids. And they find a way to coach them up and get them ready to go. So I'm with you, Alex. Hey, thanks for giving a call today. Appreciate you weighing in on your thoughts on the program today.
Yep.
Thanks a lot, Alex. Yeah, Alex was talking about that start. Remember at the beginning, they won five in a row, 11, 12, 13, 14, and 15. And then they didn't win in 16. I think that was James Madison. But then they won the next three. That was crazy. I mean, who's ever going to do that again? Gosh. 8 out of 9. And then they lost one, then they won one, then South Dakota State won two, and then the Bison won last night. So 10 FCS titles in 14 years. That is insane stuff. Thank you, Alex, for weighing in today. Had a text that came in a couple minutes ago, too. You can continue to weigh in on this one. Can you point to one thing? What is the one thing that you think is most responsible for NDSU and the dynasty they have? The texter said, Steve, watching NDSU in this division is like watching a trans man in women's sports. I'm bored with it. Yeah, I mean, last night was a competitive game. I get that. But there's a lot of games during the course of the year where are they going to win 41-3 or 51-3, right? I mean, it's there's some of that. There's some of that. I get it. All right, 5-11. Let's get to the top 5 at 5 brought to you by Nancy Kelly Realty. Go to nancykellyrealty.com. And find out more about Colfax Meadows, where small-town living is still a thing. These are what I believe to be the 5 most consequential stories in the news cycle today. We call it the top 5 at 5. Zero Hedge has a story today. I think they actually stole it from Epic Times, but they credited them, so they did it legally. Anyway, these organizations reporting the House of Representatives in D.C. has passed the Lake and Riley Act. This is the number one story that I have in the news cycle today, with a vote of 264 to 159, almost all Republicans, and 48 Democrats who have a soul, united to push the bill through the lower chamber of Congress. How about that? So the Lake and Riley bill gets through. It would require the Department of Homeland Security to detain illegal immigrants who have committed certain crimes like theft, burglary, or shoplifting. The Lake and Riley Act, said Tom Emmer, who is kind of one of the driving forces behind this, is a direct step toward ensuring that criminal, illegal aliens are swiftly and permanently removed from our communities and our country. And 159 Democrats voted no to this today. That's story number one. Story number two, the Cass County Jail is going to get a little bit of a breather thanks to the Clay County Jail. The Clay County Commission voted to bring over inmates to the Clay County Jail. They've got a little room over there right now. They say they can hold about 150. Currently, they've only got 103. And Cass County Jail, they're building an addition, and they're going to be able to, by April sometime, be able to have a few more, but they need the room. So they're going to send them over there. Sheriff Johnner says that 15 to 25 inmates weekly are housed at different places around North Dakota because they don't have the room. The Cass County Commission would still have to approve the plan. I'm not sure why they wouldn't, but maybe there's a reason. They'll pay Clay County $75 a day per inmate. So it works out good for everybody. Story number three, the Washington Post has started laying off roughly 4% of its workforce, the company said today, as the newspaper struggles to stem millions of dollars in annual losses. How about that? Boy, I know running a business can be tough, but when you're looking at millions of dollars in annual losses, that does not sound fun. The cuts will affect about 100 people across the Post's business divisions. They will not affect the Washington Post newsroom, which 2 years ago reduced their workforce by about 240 jobs to a voluntary buyout program. Traditional media, tough way to make a living these days. President-elect Donald Trump, story number four, warned today that all hell will break out in the Middle East if Hamas does not release the hostages it's holding in Gaza by the time he's inaugurated on January 20th. He has said this before. He's doubling down on it. He said, we want to get those hostages back home for Israel and for us. Isn't it nice that we have a president of the United States who says these things? Where you been, Joe Biden? Asleep at the wheel, just like everything else. And finally, Meta announced today it will eliminate its third-party fact-checking program and implement a community notes model like X has. CEO Mark Zuckerberg announced the changes on Fox News, said the company is also bringing back political content on its platforms and removing restrictions on subjects like immigration and gender. Boy, he's seen the light in a hurry now that there's a new president, hasn't he? And those, friends, are what I believe to be the 5 most consequential stories in the news cycle today. We call it the top 5 at 5. Before we hit commercial break, got a couple folks who want to jump in on the program here today. Let's start with TC in Fargo. Wants to talk a little Bison football. What's going on, TC?
As little as possible there, Stephen. I lost my recent fantasy football league, and the loser had to call in to the Steve Holmes show, so this is me paying my debt.
I love it. Yeah, that there's punishment, and then there's having to call the Steve Holmes show. All right, so number one thing, why has this Bison run been so strong for so long? Is there one thing that you can say, this is probably what I'd put my finger on?
I am gonna say that it is Jim Cramer. You know, I think this guy, if you think about, and I think the guy, the right tackle's name is Mason Miller. Don't quote me, but I think he played right tackle. And I heard a comment last night that he came into the program like maybe 240 pounds. And last night he was like a 308 or 310, something in that neck of the woods.
Crazy.
But, I mean, if you just think about what Cramer has done and the number of coaches, I think he was – I'm not sure, you probably know better than I do. He was there maybe with, at the tail end of Craig Bull and then through all of these coaches and these changes. He's the one staple in my mind in the development of players, and that's just one story. I think you can look at Cody Mock. You can look at the Zabel kid. Mm-hmm. There's just so many of them, Steve, right? If you think about how they come in, how they're developed, strength and conditioning, that's the number one thing in my mind.
That's a great point, and it's not talked about nearly enough. But, yeah, they put 50, 60 pounds on these kids. It's amazing. And I've heard stories about, you know, the freshmen that come in, how they put on weight and the kind of diets they put them on, and it's crazy what they do, but they find a way to do it, and that strength and conditioning program is amazing. Every year, you just take a look. When they needed that game-winning score last night, what were they able to do? Yeah. They were able to just pound it right down, right through the middle of that Bobcats defense. Strength and conditioning wins again. I think you're right about that. Good stuff, TC.
Yeah, you even go back to the Minnesota. I mean, how many times did we go down and beat Minnesota? You probably know that one, don't you?
Well, a couple anyway. There were a couple.
Okay, yeah. The Kansas State drive. I mean, right, you could point to a number of these things that just it is. It's just ground and pound, and it's the big boys up front. So there you go. There's my 2 cents and a cup of coffee and me paying my debt to my fantasy football league loss.
I like it, my man. I appreciate it. Better luck next year with your fantasy football league, brother. Thanks for calling in today.
Thanks, TC.
Let's go to Hal on line two. Hal gets to weigh in on this one. All right, Hal, tell me, why are the Bison able to do this year after year after year?
Yeah, I was going to go ahead and mention Jim Cramer like TC did. I got a lot of respect for a gentleman like that that sticks around a program for 15, 20 years, building it up and so on. But the first off, I would say it starts with culture. You go back to the early 60s and earlier than that, the Bison were excited when they won more than two games a year. And then Daryl Mudra comes out and teaches the team how to play. Has two assistants, Buck Nystrom, Ron Earhart, both who went on to great coaching careers, too.
Yes.
And it just started the string. You know, you had Jim Wacker following up after that, and just motivating coaches, coaches who are able to get excellent assistant coaches to come in. And, you know, coaching continues through the whole thing, a strong athletic department and director who's able to assist whatever the coaches needed.
Yeah.
And it's kind of showed. But then you get that 15, 20 years, the past years, Jim Cramer, how he's able to get fat off players, build it back with muscle, having the alignment like that.
Yeah.
Just about a month ago, I was listening to a Monday night game. Seattle was playing, and they had a backup center come in named Jalen Sundell.
Yeah, that's right.
He was a strong part of the Bison team, and the announcers are just going nuts over saying, geez, look at that backup center. He's downfield,
yeah,
leading the block for a running back running in for a touchdown.
Yes, that's great.
Amazing, you
yep,
know.
For sure.
These
yep.
guys are taught.
Hal,
these
thank-
guys are taught, right? And it shows.
Yes, they are. Thanks so much for calling, Hal. I appreciate that. Yeah, that's right. I saw Jalen get a few snaps there the other day as well. Thanks a ton for weighing in on that one. It's fun stuff to watch. It is. And I will tell you this. If I had to put my addition to this conversation, like everything that's been said here is right on. I don't spend much time at all around the program now the way I did when I covered sports for Channel 6 for about a dozen years. But I know that those guys that are part of that program now, they don't want to be the one to let it fall. And for the last couple of years, South Dakota State, great team, great program. They were able to catch up to the Bison. And that they take this personally because they feel like they're playing for every Bison player that's suited up for the last 100 years. And they don't want to let down the family. And that is a big motivator for off-season workouts and just practices when you don't want to practice anymore. There is that healthy fear of not letting down the program and the tradition, and nobody wants to be that team that lets it fall. So, and the quarterbacks, the coaches, they don't want to be that coach. They don't want to be that quarterback. And that's a big driver emotionally, no doubt about that. All right, 5:22, we're going to take a short break. James McCarty, the sports director for Flag Family Media, on his way back. We're going to talk about what comes next for NDSU football. What might be next year's team? What might they look like? And what might be the chances for them to go back? I guess you can't say back to Frisco. Go to Nashville next year for the national championship game. We'll do that after this. Our guy James McCarty is on his way home from Frisco, Texas, doing a lot of work down there over the last few days. Before we get to James, I want to tell you about Card Care Systems. Businesses, event venues, building managers, listen up. Card Care Systems, your best choice for an ATM partner. You just provide the location and Card Care Systems handles the rest, and you get a share of the ATM fees with lower credit card processing fees as well. They sell and service ATMs for area businesses too. They're very glad to have had the chance to serve their outstanding customers for the last 28 years. Nobody provides better ATM customer service than Card Care Systems. Go to getmyatm.com, getmyatm.com. That's getmyatm.com. James McCarty's with us. And James, are you? Which airport are you in right now, or have you landed back in Fargo?
I got home about 45 or so minutes ago. Our fearless general manager, GT, had dropped me off, and I was contemplating starting up my vehicle and driving to the office, and I decided that looking at rosters and prep was a little bit more important. So
there you go.
I'm currently hanging out in the living room after a couple of days, of course, on the prowl in Frisco, but it's good to be back in the frozen tundra of Fargo-Moorhead.
Well, we appreciate all the great work you did. It was fun to hear all of your reports, and I've not had a chance to visit with you since the game. What's the number one thing you'll take away from the experience down in Frisco and watching NDSU win its 10th FCS title?
I think, there's two things. One is, regardless of how much grief we give Bison fans for maybe not filling up the Fargo Dome in regular season and early playoff games, when it does matter, they show up, and they show up in a massive herd in championship capacities like they did both in the semifinal against the Jackrabbits. Had a chance to be at that game, and then, of course, the championship as well in Frisco. And additionally, on top of that, we've had four different head coaches over the last 14 years, and all four have now won a national championship.
Isn't
at the
that
sub-division
something?
Level for the Bison.
Amazing.
It is unbelievable. It's incredible.
Yeah, so James, the crowd, it seemed like the Montana State fans definitely showed up as well. On the TV call, they were saying it was maybe half and half. How did you see it as far as the fan turnout?
Yeah, I think it was pretty close to half and half. I just personally, I thought that there was a couple of little pockets of green and a couple of, you know, gold sweatshirts and T-shirts and long sleeves that were mixed in on the Bobcat side. So I personally went more in the realm of probably a 55-45, but it wasn't one of those 70-30s like we have seen in the past. I thought both fan bases were represented really well. But I do believe that there were a few more Bison fans that are overall based off of what I had seen with my own eyes.
So let's look ahead a little bit, James. We've talked a little bit on this show, and I know a lot of Bison fans have been kind of soaking in all the content about what happened last night. But let's take a look ahead to next year. Cam Miller has already declared his eligibility has been used up, so he'll be moving on to whatever comes next. He'll try to make it in the NFL. He's hired an agent, and he's got a training academy that he'll be at here for the next little while leading up to the April draft. So we know there will be a new player at quarterback. Let's start there. Who might be the guy under center for the Bison next year?
Yeah, well, more likely than not, you're kind of you're up in the air with two different guys. Will it be Nathan Hayes, or will you go to the big bruising, you know, halfback turned tail or tailback turned quarterback, whichever you want to say that, who had gotten injured for the Bison a couple of weeks ago, who missed the back half of the regular season? I'm very curious to see, because with Nate Hayes and the limited amount of time that we were able to see him on the field and a couple of blowouts this season, it seemed as though he was able to keep himself composed, able to hit receivers, and then, of course, able to make some things happen with his legs as well. So I'm very curious along that line to see, you know, what ends up happening come spring ball. Is that something to, is he the one that jumps out? Is he the one that ends up becoming that that next quarterback for the Bison? And that's something that we're going to find out here, you know, I would imagine, over these next three, maybe even closer to 4 months.
Yeah, so you've got Cole Payton, who's kind of the big bruiser that you talked about, 6'3", 234. Mm-hmm. You've got Nathan Hayes, 6'3", 206. He's a sophomore. Payton is a junior. They also have a kid named Trey Drake, a redshirt freshman. He's a 6'3 kid, too, out of New York. And, you know, probably they've got a couple kids coming here in the next class as well, so... do you think that one of those kids has an edge over the other? I know both have played this year between Cole Payton and Nathan Hayes. If you had to call it right now, how would you go on that one if you had to venture a guess as far as who gets the call on game one next year?
Yeah, and that's the toughest part to it, because Cole Payton, of course, has the experience. He's the guy that they've been trying to push in to possibly be that next quarterback, but you know, with the injury he had sustained, I don't know when it comes to not necessarily, you know, accuracy, decision-making, things of those sorts. I'm curious to see in a higher volume if Cole Payton is able to make those decisions and make those throws, because we've seen him do electric things. We've also seen him make mistakes in a limited amount of time he's been on the field. As for Nate Hayes, I think that there's a lot of upside with him, with his ability to have a big arm and to be able to also use his legs a little bit. So I'm very curious. I think early on in camp, we're going to start seeing some things in that spring ball camp, and now at the end of March into April. And I think we're going to start seeing some clarity there. I wouldn't even be surprised to see, maybe if we end up getting closer to what we had with the whole Payton Miller 1-2 tandem, maybe it turns into a Payton Hayes type of thing. And unfortunately as well, in the day and age that we are, there's opportunity for guys to either join the program or leave the program over the next week or so.
Yeah, 100% right. Where else will the Bison have big question marks, James, as far as seniors that are going to be departing and big holes in that roster for next year?
The biggest spot you're going to be looking at, and it's been something that I've just been, it's been getting a little bit more clear and obvious in my eyes over the last 12 months, is both tackles offensively. Gray Zabel, the left tackle, who's going to end up he's going to be playing on Sundays next year, and Mason Miller on the right tackle side. It all depends, you know, on things. Does he get an opportunity at the next level? Does he hang them up as well? But those two guys using up their eligibility, both for seniors, and so you're going to have to find somebody to block whoever the quarterback is, his blind side, and also, of course, his front side as well. Regardless, that's going to be a tall, tough task to do, because we know with Hunter Pontius playing left guard as a six-year senior this past season, you have a couple of younger guys that have played a lot. Trent Fraley, Griffin Empey, Jack Lewinsky is a guy who even got a start, if I remember right, about a month and a half, 2 months ago, and he's a depth piece. So I think the interior offensive line will be all right. The questions are going to be on those big, bruising, agile guys on the end.
Yeah, they don't grow on trees, those guys. Although NDSU seems to find them. And this may be an opportunity for some very good Division II player, maybe to get an opportunity to come to NDSU through the transfer portal and make a go of it. I know a couple of NDSU's receivers, Braylon Henderson and Rajah Nelson, who both were involved last night. They are seniors as well. They get Bryce Lance back. He's a junior, so he's got one more year. As good as he was last night, I've not heard anybody talk about him maybe trying to leave early for the NFL. So he'll be back for another year. So it's going to be a very different look, no doubt about that, for the NDSU passing game next year. James, thanks a lot for the time. Yep. We appreciate it. And we want to say thank you to our sponsors, ND Estate Services. They made the trip possible with James. ND Estate Services, affordable and focused. North Dakota State Services, they were our title sponsor for our coverage over the last couple of days. And a big thanks to Gate City Bank as well for being the sponsor of the Fan Cam. Gate City Bank has been a great sponsor of the Fan Cam for a number of years, and so we do appreciate all those guys very much. And James, we appreciate all your work too, my man. I'm sure you'll enjoy sleeping in your own bed tonight, so enjoy the evening, and thanks for spending a few minutes here with us today.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to that. Spud hockey tonight as well, so I'll have that
okay.
on the TV with Larry Knutson on the broadcast, and I'll be back bright-eyed, bushy-tailed in the morning at
there
the
you
office
go.
To see everybody.
Yeah, the top-ranked Spud hockey team. That's a fun story developing over in Moorhead. Thanks so much, James. You take care. All right, 5:34 here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Short break. When we come back, our own Scott Hennon was in Bismarck today for the beginning of the 2025 legislative session. Had a chance to take in Kelly Armstrong, the new governor, his State of the State address as well. What did Scott pull away as far as takeaways from day one in North Dakota legislature in Bismarck? We'll talk to him next on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Well, it was a big day in Bismarck today as the new legislative session began. Every 2 years, the citizen legislature convenes for 80 days of work to be done sometime around the end of April. Our Scott Hennon was out there today for day one of the festivities, taking in the first processes of the new session as well as the new governor's State of the State address. Good enough to join us right now on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. Scotty, good afternoon to you. A busy and crazy day out there. Tell me about some of your big takeaways from day one.
Yeah, it was busy and crazy. A lot of optimism, which usually is the case on day one, right? Everybody's happy and full of enthusiasm that their bill is going to be the bill, and that quickly goes away when they start whittling down some of the bills. But today was all positive and a great day, obviously, for Kelly Armstrong and his family. Pretty extraordinary to think that Kitten Dickinson is now the governor. And just it's a neat little story. And we had Ron Ness on this morning, and he said, think about this. He said Kelly obviously was in the private sector. He was a lawyer, worked for the family business a little bit, practiced law, and decides one day that, maybe I should do some public service. So 12 years ago, decides to run for the legislature. That leads to him being in Congress, and now he's the governor. That's a pretty swift move through the maneuvering of everything, and I think today really was about him and his plan. Obviously, every legislative body says, well, okay, thank you very much. Now we'll do our plan, but, he clearly heard the citizens of North Dakota in this campaign, and the 800-pound gorilla, 800-pound elephant in the room has definitely been a property tax reform, and I thought he laid out a pretty bold plan there. A lot of work to do on getting it across the finish line, but, when you're talking about starting at $1,550 for everybody automatically, you don't have to pay for it off of your property tax bill, in the beginning, and a transition to get that number to $4,200, albeit 12 years from now,
mm-hmm.
you've got some pretty significant reform there. And, the caps, there will be a lot of squealing, but his proposal at least kind of threaded that needle pretty good to say, we free spending where you're at today, and you can, whatever your revenue is today, you can freeze it. And then we'll add 3% to it every year. And if you want more than 3%, then you'll have to ask your citizens to approve that. So I don't know how much you got to see of, the math, if you will, Steve, on that. But that's the big one, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting piece. And I liked what Kelly said about the concept. Some people are going to say, well, you can't do that. Well, He said, now at this point, we're paying about 50% of the property taxes for people in this state. We got a right to call some shots on how this goes. I think he's exactly right on that. And the state should feel like they have some say in what's happening at a local level.
Yeah, and by the way, whatever reason, the state's done a really poor job of having the citizens of North Dakota understand how much they have been putting into property tax relief,
mm-hmm,
right?
Yeah.
And what that has enabled is, you know, the cities, counties, and all the schools to strut around and spend more, and, you know, the state will just pick up the tab, and instead the state's paying what they're paying, and people are still paying more, so it's a hard stop. It can't continue the way it is. Nobody's going to get to zero. You're not going to get property taxes to zero. That's unrealistic, and I don't think anybody's saying that. I shouldn't say anybody. I mean, there's some people that say, just take the legacy fund and pay for property taxes and make it
right.
Zero. Well, you know, why should the legacy fund, which is, by the way, oil money, fund roads in Fargo? I mean, they already do to the tune of like $30 million a year, that comes Fargo's way. That's a significant number out of oil taxes. But, I think there has to be a balance here. And I love the idea of limiting the increase. By the way, if Fargo wants to spend 10% more rather than 3% more after last year's baseline, they can. They just have to convince the people who pay the tab that it's a good idea.
I think this is such a key point of this whole thing. And I said this when I kind of broke it down earlier in the show, Scott, that you take a look at City of Fargo, and I probably rail on him three times every show because I'm just so fed up with just spending that doesn't really seem to have any sort of accountability at all. And this is going to be a strong message to cities, municipalities, school boards, like you said, that have been spending more. And, well, you know, not much we can do. Okay, well, now the legislature is saying if this goes through, and again, it's got to be voted on and all of that, but that's going to be a strong message to the city of Fargo. And I think a good ally maybe is not the perfect word, but you get where I'm going for people like Michelle Turnberg and Dave Pepcorn, who have said, time out. We can't keep jacking up our expenses here, or it's going to cause property taxes in the county to go up by more than 3%. So this is sort of maybe there are adults in the room a little bit now on this situation, and I think it's going to be really interesting to see what does the city of Fargo do. Do they sue the state about this thing? Do they protest? Do they try to respond in some other way? I think this is going to be really interesting. I wish we had all the commissioners here in the studio. We'd ask them, what do you think this means to you?
Yeah, I'd be careful if I were them, especially if you're Fargo. Because Fargo's not exactly popular in everywhere else but Fargo when it comes to the legislature, right? So if Fargo starts throwing sharp elbows, they'll probably guarantee it'll be worse than it is now for Fargo.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? And so they're going to need to thread that needle. You can't go with a Denny Wallaker-like haymaker saying, up yours. And I think Tim Mahoney's smart enough about that. I don't think, I think most of that conversation will be through diplomatic conversations. But Fargo's going to be fine because Fargo has, the power of Fargo to throw its weight around in the legislature. I'd be concerned more about, Fezzeden and some of these other places that don't have lobbyists and $1.4 million worth of communication people and all the other assets that Fargo has to try and, quote-unquote, argue on their behalf. You know what I mean? I think this is a really good balance. I do. I think they can't complain. They've got local control, right? And that was a big beef with what was on the ballot. Hey, we got to go hat in hand, and ask for the money to come back. They don't have that anymore. They control their own destiny. Nobody's telling them what. And all we're doing is hearing the taxpayers of North Dakota to say, enough already. You get a 3% increase year over year. If you need any more, that's on you. So I think it's genius. Now, I saw Jim Casper and said, what do you think? And, it's terrible. It's awful. It's nowhere near enough money. There's going to be people where, they're not going to be satisfied with this, believing that it should be more. I don't think it's going to be more. I think, you already have the House talking about 1,000. You got Kelly talking about 1,500. The House, and by the way, the way they're able to do the 1,500, I'm sure you figured this out, is the general fund pays the $1,000,
mm-hmm.
and the $550 comes from the earnings, and basically over time that swaps, and you get the general fund down to zero, and all of the property tax relief comes out of the earnings of the legacy fund. Well, that was one of the arguments of the proponents of Measure 4. So they're getting it. It'll never be enough for some of them, but I think they've threaded the needle pretty good here of satisfying the disdain for the amount of increases in property taxes year over year, and the fact that that's not sustainable to the taxpayers without a revolt, without, you know, risking, hey, it's not enough, and they're just going to come after this another way. You know, mind you, they lost 60-40 or whatever it was anyway. So they don't exactly have a strong argument. I'm talking about the Measure 4 folks, you know, with their case. So if the legislature does something that is significant, and that's an important number. Another thing I like, by the way, about the 1550, you automatically get it. You don't have to apply for it. They don't give you hoops to jump through for it. The only arguments I've heard, one is, you know, it would be nice if you include small businesses. I get you don't want to include, you know, the Walmarts and that whole argument. And I posed these both to Kelly in the interview that Jay Thomas and I did with him as soon as he finished with the receiving line. We'll air it in its entirety tomorrow on What's on Your Mind, but it was on Jay Thomas's show earlier over on WDOI. I said, here's two things I'm hearing. One, you know, can you do something for small businesses? He said, do they own homes? So that was his answer there.
Yep.
we're already doing something. And then I said, what about farmland? You know, there's a lot of the ag community that would like to see relief on farmland. And he said, you know, I forget what he said, but basically that's a non-starter, you know. And I'm sure you're familiar, but farmland is not taxed
at the same rate, yeah.
Value, it's taxed on what the production possibilities are. So they already are sitting pretty good. Farmers need to be careful about not asking for too much, you know. So I don't know how strong that will be. I was sitting next to the folks from the Farmers Union, and they clearly are going to push for that. But that's the only pushback I heard, other than Craig Hedlund, who is the chair of the House Finance and Tax Committee, and a great flag listener, by the way, when he's not chewing the from Montpelier way, when he's on the tractor, he's listening to the flag. So he very much has been the champion of income tax going to zero. And Kelly Armstrong said nothing today about income tax. I think even Craig said in the interview I did with him after, we're going to need to do more to get competitive with South Dakota and get to zero. But we took a pretty good bite at that apple. Maybe the next bite will have to come in the next session. But
yeah.
You could hear a little bit about that,
yep.
Still, too.
Yeah, makes sense. Scott, good stuff, man. Thanks for the update today. Boy, I could talk to you for about another hour about all this, because it's a fascinating conversation. But no matter where you stand on, is it enough? Is it too much? Does it help me or does it not? It's nice to see that all the language and the verbiage we heard from the campaign trail about, we hear you, North Dakota, we hear you, it certainly sounds like Kelly Armstrong did, and will, and so do the other lawmakers there. So thanks for the report, my man. Travel safe, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good. I'm going to make a stop at PetroServe USA in Valley City to have dinner, and I'll be home.
I bet you. It's some good popcorn, too. All right. Thanks, Scotty. 551, Steve Ahlstrom Show coming back after this. When you need a little help, think Labor Masters. They have the quality, reliable help that you need, and you can get that help today. They are Fargo-Moorhead, West Fargo's number one choice for daily and temp labor. No job too big, no project too small. The team at Labor Masters works with more than 200 businesses in the FM area. They've been doing it for decades, Nancy Kelly and her team. They know the game. They know the players. They know how to get things done for you. If you're a business or maybe just a homeowner, got a lake place, a ranch, a farm, whatever, when you need a hand, think Labor Masters. Labormasters.net. Labormasters.net. Get the quality, reliable help that you need today. All right, from the text line, got a couple more notes on the Bison story right there. One text just says, Steve, it is amazing how they keep finding these quarterbacks that just have ice water in their veins and can always seem to find a way to get it done. When the game is close and it's late and it really matters, I just know the Bison are going to win because of these quarterbacks. Yeah, I see that. To your text about NDSU football, What are they supposed to do? Not try to win? I think this is in regard to the person who said, I'm just kind of getting tired of them winning all the time and beating people up by a lot. Maybe he should say the other teams need to get better. Well, there's that too. The other teams should just get better. Yeah, it's, you know, when this, I've always been in favor of them looking for a next level up. I just think it makes for a better product altogether. They can do it. There's enough money in this town to do it. If they want to do it. I know a lot of people at the beginning were slow to come around to my way of thinking on this one. And a lot of people now are starting to say more and more like, you know what? It would be kind of fun to go to a bowl game in Nashville or something like that, which I guess they're going to go play the FCS championship there next year. But as a regular thing. So thanks for the comments on that. Look, just enjoy it. My gosh. It can't continue this way. It just can't. It has. It's been fantastic, but it's been so fun. And I don't know. That Coach Polisek, he's a go-getter. He's not going to let him rest on what they did this year, and he's going to groom another quarterback to go get it done next year. Go Bison. Some fun stuff. Have a great night, my friend, and keep on flying that flag.